Welcome back to episode 225. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, this week we had the verdict in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. He was found not guilty on all counts. This occurred on Friday. Not guilty on all counts on homicide and intentional homicide counts in the shootings of Anthony Huber, Joseph Rosenbaum, and Gage Grosskreutz, difficult name. Did you see that? I guess you saw the videotape. You watched it.
Oh yes.
So very moving. I think it's very genuine. The kid broke down, understandably. Had to sit, almost collapse. I guess he sat down, and you could see in the background, I believe, his mother and his sister and their reaction to it all. Very moving in a way. I think it's hard be very cold. You have a lump in your throat when you're watching it. Although he's a man now, legally, he was 17 when all this went down, but he was found not guilty in all counts. Verdict came as no surprise, really, to anyone who had paid attention to the case, because the evidence, or lack thereof, was astonishing. The fact that this case was ever brought was a crime in and of itself. Nevertheless, the media seemed to be dedicated, at least the establishment media, the legacy media, the dinosaur media, was dedicated to trying to convict this guy. I think maybe the exception was Fox News, which is somewhat out of that. I guess you can't really call them dinosaur media. They kind of have their own little niche in the scheme of things, but they covered it, I think, more fairly. Basically, everything we were told about the case by the mainstream media, the legacy media, the dinosaur media, was false. You know, he did not bring a gun across state lines. He wasn't an alien to the community. Apparently, that matters now. State boundaries matter now, but national boundaries don't. He had familiar roots in the city. His father lives there. He wasn't a militia wannabe. Apparently, he was a volunteer. He volunteered at the fire department. Like a lot of young men, he wants to be a police officer, an EMT. The accusation he was somehow a white supremacist or links to ties to that had no basis. Even Joe Biden as a candidate alluded to that, which may be a grounds for a lawsuit, some are speculating. The Salmon case, Nick Salmon against the Washington Post and CNN, which he eventually got a settlement for. All the men who were attacking him were white, because we're being told this is a racial thing. I guess because supposedly the protest riot, really, was a reaction to the Jacob Blake shooting, where it was reported that Jacob Blake was killed. I saw this NBC report actually said he was killed. I guess that, Jacob Blake is alive. He was injured and now he's now in a wheelchair because of his wounds. But there was an altercation with the police where he refused to submit to arrest. He had a knife in his possession, went for it, and was shot by the police. So this sparked the riots. Oddly enough, the governor, who was largely responsible for this, along with the mayor of the city, released a bizarre statement that after the verdict, said no verdict will be able to bring back the lives of the two men Rittenhouse killed. Well, yeah, we all know that. Nor heal the wounds of Jacob Blake shooting that triggered the riots, nor remove the state's need to work toward equity. So again, that word equity, there's no condemnation of the riots, the violence, that did so much damage to the community that Kyle Rittenhouse was involved with, because he went there to clean up the city, then protect some property. Mayor de Blasio, soon to be ex-mayor of New York, had this to say about the verdict: disgusting, and it sends a horrible message to this country. Now, I don't know what they were watching or what the evidence they presented, but clearly Kyle Rittenhouse had acted in self-defense. A gun was pointed at him, he was attacked. Someone tried to, Huber tried to, behead him with a skateboard or bludgeon him with it.
There's a picture of him trying to crush his head against the pavement of the street with a flying mm-hmm. leap and a stomp.
Yeah.
That's what precipitated his death. So there was no question that was self-defense. I mean, you look at the slow motion video, and it's Rittenhouse was lucky to have survived any of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just I wasn't surprised by the verdict at all. I was thinking, well, maybe politics would get involved. It seemed like there was the Chauvin case where the jury was evidently intimidated. But it seemed to be a little different in this case. The judge handled it better. He kept the prosecution in line. And there are some people arguing that the prosecutor should be brought up on charges for misconduct, the same way that Nifong was during the Duke lacrosse thing.
I was surprised at the verdict. I thought it would be a hung jury, and particularly mm-hmm. because the deliberations had gone on so long. Usually in open and shut, it's a few hours and then you get the verdict. But the fact that they had to take, like 3 days, 3.5 days to reach a verdict, I thought there was a couple holdouts who were, trying to convict him.
Mm-hmm. But the takeaway from it is why the charges were brought in the first place. Well, obviously it was politically charged. This incident occurred during the summer of George Floyd, of course. And of course, we reflect upon that whole summer and really what facilitated those riots, the unrest, the civil unrest, the protests, they call them, was a stand down by the authorities. And really the people that should be on trial here should be all the political actors that allowed this to go down in the first place. Why was Kyle Rittenhouse there in the first place? Well, he went there to defend property that was not being protected by the government, which is supposedly what government's job is, which is why you pay your taxes. But the governor, which refused help from the federal government, Evers did that. The mayor, the police all stood down and let this occur. And all this talk about Kyle Rittenhouse coming from out of state, meaning a neighboring state, meaning he traveled like 20 miles or something. No one talks about the interstate, operation called Antifa and BLM, where they went from city to city organizing riots and creating unrest. Apparently you can travel across state lines to do that, and the FBI won't bother you. I think the reason why Rittenhouse was charged in the first place, by the way, the prosecutor charged him after 2 days. There was no investigation conducted at all in this. So he just went into it blind and had to proceed. And there is some speculation that the misconduct was so egregious that he was going for a mistrial. Because they can theoretically charge him again. On this case, but basically, what are you, the new world order, or sort of the globalist empire, pretty much focused on Kyle Rittenhouse, because what Kyle Rittenhouse represented was the ability of people to defend themselves, whether it's their property or their personal safety. What we're seeing here is you have governments that are standing down, not protecting property. You saw this in St. Louis. You see it in Chicago. You saw it in New York. You saw it in Los Angeles, and ironically there, it's the former governor of New York, Cuomo, de Blasio, even Newsom coming out and condemning the verdict, providing no substance in their condemnation, just saying it's outrageous. But these are people that stood down and let property get destroyed, just neglecting their primary duty as elected officials, particularly those elected officials in the executive branch.
Excuse me, let me just interject an exclamation point to that thought. This afternoon, the Louis Vuitton store in San Francisco, in the major square they have there, names escapes me right now, but it is the most Tony, or was the most Tony part of the city, and the Louis Vuitton store was the centerpiece. It was looted and gutted of all merchandise.
That was today?
Today, 100%.
Now, was this a protest over the Rittenhouse verdict?
No doubt.
So naturally,
nothing helps your protesting like a Louis Vuitton bag. It's just necessary. So anyway, it's San Francisco is a failed state, basically. Uh-huh. It doesn't have any capacity or desire anymore to even, defend itself. It doesn't have an identity of culture, because if they can just come in and take all of the bags out of the Louis Vuitton store and don't have to pay anything and no police show up, then that means that there are no businesses in San Francisco that can function. Nothing can function. So you have an autonomous zone, like the original one in Seattle, where the rules are established by, you know, the Antifa intellectuals, who are rare, I would presume. They wouldn't live in such a hellhole. And the fentanyl brigade. And so that's really what is occurring in San Francisco. Now, it's a strange world, because just outside of it, there is normal life going on. It's just the autonomous zones are just growing. Like, for example, in Portland and in Seattle, the areas where the fentanyl brigade is in control is larger and larger. And, you know, when you talk about the political, thrust that brought the absurd charges against Rittenhouse, and Rittenhouse need to be in the city that night to try to help defend it. This all goes, or, you know, not all, but certainly the most direct line is to Soros.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you follow the money as to how these, because you can't really even call them traitors, you know, they're really not. They're puppets, you know, of Soros. And mm-hmm. you have to remember, look closely into Soros's history. I mean, he is a 100% Rothschild cutout. He never did anything on his own. He was just, you know, speculation that was somehow always miraculously on the right side.
Yeah, he's a disaster capitalist, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah, he was but he was like the Rothschilds, knowing, you know, that Napoleon was going to lose, you know. I mean, he's made all of these speculations on basically interest rates and what the Bank of England was going to do. Well, the Rothschilds know perfectly well what the Bank of England is going to do. It's not speculation. So he was creative. I mean, he is like Gates, you know. I mean, he is just a creation of the secret society, the oligarchs, and he's a way to transfer money. And now, you know, you have this really aggressive, new line of politicians that are just determined to destroy what can be called culture.
Yeah, but their remarks, even some of the people, I don't know what impact a commentator on MSNBC has. Like, does anyone really watch Joy Reid? I don't know if it's a fact question, her just being more stupid or crazy. More of a, is she an idiot or a lunatic? I don't know. Maybe both. You know, it can be both, I suppose. But the remarks are just so over the top. They're at such a variance with the reality. Even the people they bring on to talk about it, they're not dealing with what's really going on. It's just like a dual world or.
Can I give you an explanation for that? Because I actually have thought about this for years, and I actually have a position. The reason why, you know, you see something like that, or if you listen to de Blasio and you wonder, well, you know, is he saying this to just make me angry? Is he saying this? the reason that they have these positions, when you get someone like Joy Reid, is they are propaganda devices, but for the tranche that will respond to that vein of propaganda.
Yeah.
So in other, they have some propaganda, I'm sure, for, you know, so-called conservatives, but they have really hit a gold mine with the woke consciousness crowd. And so they roll out these individuals to, you know, give them, a story. I mean, even the whole reaction to the Rittenhouse thing was just absurd. How could anyone, you know, I mean, Biden, for heaven's sakes, he came out and he said maybe it was the point of it. The point is to reinforce the propaganda consciousness, in other words, the insanity, the programmed insanity of the people who actually take that political vein seriously.
It's also a green light to go riot.
Of course it is.
I mean, about dog whistling. They talk about dog whistling white supremacy. Talk about dog whistling, riots, and mayhem.
They had about five or six. The one in Portland got going pretty good. They actually declared it a riot. I talked to someone who lives outside of Portland, and he said it was really not much. And his pithy comment was, well, how can you tell a night from when it riots and when it doesn't? You know, it's pretty similar to just.
Well, they may want to file false reports down
in Portland.
Now they might want to file exaggerated reports to call these things riots because they want people to think there are riots.
Yeah, because right. Then they, you know, creates this dialectic that's distracting us from the death shot, the clutch shot. You know, I mean, to me, this is the theater of the politics will reach, you know, a crescendo maybe with Gisela Maxwell's trial.
I mean, I think what happened was the prosecutor, you know, the other prosecutor, the portly gentleman, that said that you don't have a right to bring a gun for use a gun in self-defense if someone else doesn't have a gun, which is absurd. But he says sometimes you just have to take a beating. And that's sort of the message here is you just got to take it. You can't fight back. And not just with the Rittenhouse thing. Obviously, they don't want white males armed defending property. You know, wow. And, you know, so they say this is whiteness. Well, in a way it is, because that's European Western culture is, you know, the castle doctrine, right? The right to bear arms, your property. I mean, property isn't meaningless. Property reflects your labor, your time. And so when people deprive you of your property, they're depriving you of your life, not the time you spent earning that, but also that's how you sustain yourself. So it really, that's why in the past, rioting is a capital offense, because it's such a danger. It's things like cattle rustling in the old days, crimes that are so disruptive that aren't necessarily murder are sometimes dealt with severely because they're such a threat. So it's a very, when the government appears to be facilitating and sanctioning this behavior, which is what we're really seeing and whether it's former, you know, Governor Cuomo or de Blasio, these are the very people who let the riots occur. So it really is chutzpah for them to come out, then, you know, try to condemn a young man who was out there trying to do the job that taxpayers pay the police, the National Guard, and the governors to do. But again, they don't want people having the ability or even the inclination to defend themselves. You know, so they say, we have police we pay for, so we can all sit back and not do anything when something happens because there's police. Then the police are taken away, they stand down, they're defunded or whatever. Then what do you got? Then you have to have vigilantism. You condemn vigilantism. Well, if you don't have the constituted authorities doing their duty, you're going to have a vigilante force step in and fill the void. And that's what they created. Then they condemn it. You know, it's ridiculous. I win, tails you lose, basically.
Exactly. You know, I mean, they didn't permit the riots. They created the riots. I mean, this was, you know, when you have the original George Floyd riots, you have the Masonic black dressed individual with the umbrella just walking down the street, breaking all the windows.
All the bricks being delivered.
And then the bricks were delivered. So, you know, this was a political theater to, you know, they're looking for those events they can put theatrically in front of us that will be the most distracting.
Well, then you have something like the January 6th event, which they call insurrection or riot when it wasn't. And you have people who are being put in jail for 4 or 5, 6 years for misdemeanor trespass, more or less. But they're being called, it's an unprecedented event. You have people who are still sitting in jail in solitary confinement for misdemeanor trespass because of COVID or whatever. The judges keep putting off the trial date. This is obviously it's being used as a, you know, the legal system uses a bludgeon against for someone's political beliefes. You have people that never even stepped into the Capitol building that day, being raided by the FBI at 4 a.m. in the morning. You know, completely.
Yeah, and that was, you know, Trump's supporters who were protesting the stolen election were, as the theatrical construction had been set up, were really representing European Americans.
Yes.
You know, this was who they were. And so all of the drama had been constructed. So there was an idea, you know, that they were actually going to overturn the election and that, you know, their presence would somehow benefit democracy. You know, they were being heroic by being there. And then they weren't just thrown under the bus. They had their legs sawed off.
Yes.
You know, where you have the Republicans, basically just crater at the last second. This was all a theatrical event.
Well, it was an FBI operation. Was it Cold Snap or something, which ties back to the that plot supposedly to kidnap Governor Whitmer in Michigan, which turns out the whole thing was an FBI operation. And there's a lot of evidence suggests that a lot of the, first they were invited in by the Capitol Hill police, but then there are people who have investigated found it, you know, there are all types of FBI informants and, involved in this to sort of provoke it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but again, with the message is don't protest.
Yeah. So they have the a theatrical production for propaganda purposes to shape behavior, to keep us impotent, you know, and then at the same time, you're getting the transvestitism of the military. You know, these things are popping up. It's all a way to just put us into the clown world. And in there, we're in 100% completion of, you know, the authoritarian personality, chapter 23. You know, this is just the kind of the conclusion of our, you know, the next chapter of all that. And it's very interesting, though, isn't it? Because you have Rittenhouse, right, you know, of good with a gun and well organized. You know, he really handled himself well. You know, you have a situation now in Europe where you wonder if heroes like this are going to emerge, because now in Austria, they have what I would call a final solution style lockdown that's supposed to begin Monday, I believe. Yeah. To give the Austrians who are the final holdouts will be the most lethal that, you know, Pfizer and Moderna can come up with. So this is, if I was in that situation, I would just assume that, that, you know, this is, you know, this is a situation like in Hungary during the revolution, you know, the, against the Soviet occupation. You're just fighting for your life. And I just wanted to mention, you know, you think about these lockdowns, and I think this one is scheduled to be 2 weeks, but of course that's ludicrous. It's going, you know, they never are for 2 weeks. They always last longer and longer. And of course you're heading into the flu season, and you're also heading into the period where the autoimmune diseases are going to start popping up, and they already are, but you're going to start to see them accelerate. And so now if you lock up this cohort, right, the vaccinated, I mean, these guys are just without medication, without vitamin D, you know, you put them, I mean, they are just on the chopping block. The lethality, the percentages of dead people, if they do like a 2 or 3 month full lockdown like this, would be enormous. So now you have the unvaxxed, which are a large fraction of Austria. They claim, this is the government, that there's 40% there about, but I think that's an exaggeration. I would suspect it's more like 50. And these are the clear-minded and fighting individuals. And so things will, you know, they're coming right to a head, because, my point is, my conjecture is that they know that the autoimmune disorders with which they intend to reduce population are already starting to become visible. So they have to intimidate every last person they can. And this is why they're going full draconian right now. They don't need to do it this way. They could slowly whittle away, you know, at the populations over the next 6 months, but they know that forthwith you're gonna see, you know, probably real explosion of, you know, medical, you know, conditions in the vaccinated. And after that, you're not going to get anyone else to be vaccinated. Good statistics today. I got some from Alan Berenson, and he pointed out that the vaccinated all cases death statistics are running at 100%. In other words, twice as many as in the unvaccinated. Okay, this is just from recent National Health England statistics numbers, and it's as solid as a rock.
What constitutes an unvaccinated person?
What constitutes one?
Yeah.
Someone who hasn't had the jab. I mean, well, you're right.
Saying,
I mean,
if you had one shot or it's 14 days later?
England has very tidy data, mm-hmm. and they have the unvaccinated as a category and the single jab as a category broken out.
Okay.
And then they have the jabbed. The jabbed, the double jabbed, they compare in the statistical chart that I got, and then they give all the data to so you can actually verify and everything is correct. It was just the vaxxed against the unvaxxed, and the death rate was twice as high. And this began exactly when the vaccine rollout began.
Is this overall death? Is this
overall? It's overall death. And this is what you're going to see. You're not going to see the vaccinated dying of COVID. They're going to be dying of all kinds of stuff. I mean,
yeah, well, because it destroys your immune system. So.
Immune system. And incidentally, if you want to get good, really clear information on how the immune system has been damaged, and I don't mean in theory. I mean, he will produce the scientific paper showing how it all operates. Just go to Guillaume Biological. It's on Twitch, John Kue, and he talks about it almost every single day about how the immune system has been damaged by he refers to the vaccine as a transvection. That's a technical term for the use of mRNA inside of a cell to produce a protein. He said the transvections, and he doesn't talk in conjecture. He doesn't talk like that. He brings out the science papers. And he said, here is why you can be sure that the autoimmune diseases are going to be catastrophic this winter. And he brings out the science papers. And what's really quite revealing is that he says, look, they know this, obviously. He's not all the way into the conspiracy world, though he's getting there. Every day, I think he's getting closer and closer. But he says, of course they know this. They know perfectly well that, that there will be more lethal variants. They're creating these artificial variants that the people who have really damaged immune systems that would normally relate to them like the common cold are just going to be, having pneumonia because they just don't have the T cells. And the just to get technical for 1 second, there is a diminution, a paucity of T cells and antibodies to the N protein. Those are the two components of the immune system that are in real trouble in the vaccinated. And this isn't something that is speculative. This is the actual data. So they're going to demand as they get sick. The explanation will be they need boosters.
Yeah, we already see it with Dr. Fauci when he said that the vaccine does not prevent hospitalizations, reaction or death, so now we're getting the solution is to get a booster, the same thing. How does that booster make any sense?
Yeah, it makes no sense. It's sort of like the reporting for the Rittenhouse. I mean, it makes sense to someone whose mind is been constructed by the propaganda and has succumbed to it. I mean, I had just a astonishing conversation today, Tim, with someone at the farmer's market whose daughter was going to go back to Australia. And she was saying that the lockdowns were necessary because they didn't have the vaccine, but now they had the vaccine, so everything was going to be fine. And, with someone like that, what can you do? And this was like heartfelt and passionate belief about reality. So, Tim, I mean, I don't have any explanation or kind of communication that will do anything with a person like that. I have incidentally, that individual will be having her booster this week. So this is the purification. This is the only way that you can kind of see any positive thing about it. Is that as a resistance organization against the oligarchic control, we have been weighed down by basically people who have bought into the propaganda to these facts any longer, right? Well, they are the ones who are the most vax. They're going to be taking their boosters up the booster. Them will happen. You're going to see. Like when the autoimmune set in, that people, they will say, well, your antibody levels are low. You need another boot. I know you had one 2 weeks ago, but this is an emergency.
Yeah, this is where, I mean, obviously, there's mind control at play here. I mean, there is a, because Dr. Fauci, earlier this month, he did a interview at the New York Times, and he was forced to admit the fact that the vaccines do not reliably protect recipients from any serious COVID case or death. He said he had to explain what's going on in Israel. And Fauci said, they are seeing a waning of immunity, not only against infection, but against hospitalization and to some extent death, which is starting to now involve all age groups. It isn't just the elderly. And in other words, the vaccine's protective, I guess, efficiency wanes not only in regard to, you know, to infection, but also to severe death or disease or illness. Then he said, he went on to say, I guess he was speaking about the effectiveness of the vaccine in the countries with the with high rates. And he says, it's waning to the point that you're seeing more and more people getting breakthrough infections, and more of those people are getting breakthrough infections or winding up in the hospital. So basically, this is an admission that the vaccines are, those who are vaccinated are getting infected more and more and ending up in the hospital and succumbing to the disease than those who aren't vaccinated. So at some point, you got to go, then and the solution is, oh, we need another booster. So, you know, they don't protect the recipients from getting infected, infecting others. They don't protect recipients against hospitalization or death. So they're a complete failure, but they're being pushed ever more, or a booster. But then there are people who still want to go out, you know, who think people have to get the shot, you know, to protect themselves, when the evidence is the exact opposite.
Right. Well, the official Public Health England's data says the infection rates are higher in the vaxxed than the unvaxxed. And Tim, you want to take a guess at what the difference is? I won't waste your time. It's over 100%.
Okay.
there in the Spectator, which is, you know, straight up English publication, they had one of the pithiest articles I've ever read in my life. It was by this guy Lionel Shriver, and he goes, the vaccine passports don't make much sense, you know, because he goes, the rates are higher, twice as high among the vaxxed and the unvaxxed. And, you know, so it's over 100% more. And he has this sense that kind of brought a smile. He goes, the UK Health Security Agency frantically clarifies that the data should not be used to estimate vaccine effectiveness. he goes, a caveat which I include for the sake of accuracy, but then this is the sentence. He goes, but the differences in the infection rate are drastic enough for you to draw your own conclusions. And he has a chart, and it shows that the vaxxed are getting, like, have a per 100,000 are over 100%, twice as much, more than twice as much, which is the same percentage as their fatality rates overall for all death causes, right? So this is my point, is that there is no way you can get to twice as much infectivity if your immune system isn't having a little problem. Do you see what I mean, Tim?
Mm-hmm.
It could go into the red, like say, hey, this didn't work out. We're 15, we've lost, you know, we were 15, but twice as much, your immune system is having a problem in processing viruses, and the rates are all straight up. In other words, this every 2 weeks when you get the data, the rate of the difference between the vax and the undax, the gap starts getting bigger and bigger. So they even in the expose, which is a British blog that I recommend, I go to a lot. They actually have graphs showing where we'll be in 3 months, you know, just based on the rates. And they're also charting the collapse of the immune system. Literally, it will be the Oxford study projections which led us to the lockdown. That's the kind of numbers that you're going to be looking at, because the disease that mankind is facing is the vaccine, and it is expertly designed to make us weaker in terms of the immune system, and so that all of the virus and bacteria, which we normally clear without any trouble, these poor devils are not going to be able to escape from. They're going to have to be living in bubble rooms, and of course, they will be propagandized to believe that, well, these are variants, you know, and it's because of the unvaccinated. They didn't get the vaccine, the variants got out, and that's what's getting you, and that's why you have to stay inside your house for the rest of your life. You can't meet anyone because, so, you know, it's this is the plan, and that's why the next couple of months are going to be, you know, there will be, I would be amazed if you don't see fighting in Germany and Austria, because I think those nations are of special focus to the oligarchs. They want to depopulate those populations. And I was in communication today with people who they are in Europe. They weren't in Vienna, but they have family there, and they had communication with people who were there. And they were saying that there is finally a sense of it's a civil war. You know, that's really where the kind of the spirit of the people is heading. Vienna was very, very docile up to, you know, 6 months ago. You know, Paris was protesting, but Vienna. Anyway, now they've caught on. I think that the independent media has done the job that it's supposed to do. And the people have been alerted, you know.
Well, you saw the same thing with the Rittenhouse thing, where the legacy media, the old line media, was, you know, obviously trying to railroad this kid, and there's the independent media, which obviously, well, like I said, if you look, I think most people are aware that, you know, this kid was innocent, despite the claims of the mainstream media. And same thing with this, where with all this information, although they've tried, because you saw that with Rittenhouse, where YouTube and the social network platform, Twitter, they actually censored information regarding the trial, and the same thing, of course, with vaccines and the whole pandemic thing with, you know, medical misinformation, that excuse. And despite that, word's getting out. So they don't have the control they think they do or they want.
No, and thank heavens, because, you know, the kind of control they had in 1950 was thin. They didn't have, you know, the snooping power, but absolute, you know, in the sense that mm-hmm. no one was questioning it. But now CNN has lost, you know, like 90% of its viewers. It's really, I mean, they have less than a million subscribers to most of their shows. I mean, Joe Rogan gets more to his podcast, for God's sake. So the independent media has become, it's rough, and I don't think it'll ever change, hopefully, because if it permits freedom, then you're going to get shills, and you're going to get crazy people, and people who come from the bad place in the heart, you know. I mean, it'll have all that in there, but it's also, it has people that are just trying to get honest information out.
Yeah.
People that are questioning things honestly, and it's not afraid to talk about stuff, which is our, it doesn't have an exclusion list based on propaganda, right? You can talk about the Holocaust, you know, you can talk about the percentage of Jews in the, you know, the original Bolshevik. And you can even talk about, you know, the Rothschild Soros influence in the United States, and speculate as to what extent that's involved in the situation in Germany and in Austria now going forward. So it's kind of strange, isn't it, that all these things are, they all kind of blend into, well, they blend into a structure of civil war. You know, you look at Rittenhouse, you look at what he had to do to survive, you look at his, you know, his use of weapons, right? How it saved his life, right? Mm-hmm. Then you look at the situation in Austria and Germany, and very few of those people are going to have weapons. But they have the spirit to organize. And then from there, it's just a question of how they'll be able to, you know, to fight.
Well, Italy, they stopped it. Was it a passport program?
Absolutely.
Just by going out in the streets, you know?
Yeah. And today, this is correct. The protest in Vienna had two components that are rarely seen in these kinds of riots. One are, the city police joined the protesters.
Yeah, I've heard, yeah, discussion about the military not backing it. And so
a fraction of the military, and I don't have information about this, but I asked, you know, my suggestion through the people that I knew that were in communication there. And I just said, look, for God's sakes, if they quit the police force, make sure they keep their firearms.
Yeah, there's no point in resigning.
You know. There's no point in resigning. And in fact, they shouldn't resign. What they should do, in my opinion, is say, okay, we're going to arrest the police chief.
I think you could turn around, arrest the police chief, arrest the government, arrest the cabinet, and arrest you them. Could bring in what's that a German attorney, Fulmich, or and name him like counsel and indict them. Because they are conspirators. You can make the case, you know, with Bill Gates, the World Health Organization, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and Eco Health Alliance, and
and you know something, they should also have an election, and there is a silver lining. This party will very likely be the majority in Austria and Germany in about 6 months.
Well, I kind of sent that email. I said, is the Republican Party about to become the anti-jab party? Because you have one thing is you had this Fifth Circuit Court, you know, which is considered a conservative red court, coming out unanimously to declare Biden's mandate unconstitutional. And so the OSHA said they're not going to enforce it. They never had the power to do it anyway, but so they're not going to follow through with it. So the mandate's gone as of now, and people don't anticipate it'll be back. So companies, if a company tells you they're following a mandate, they are not. So don't comply with that. Say no, that the mandate has been ruled unconstitutional. And you had 50 GOP senators, I think all 50 in the US Senate came out to vote for a resolution condemning the mandate. So this anti-jab politics is becoming rather popular. Right now it's partisan, which is unfortunate, but it's also fortunate because it's necessary to fight it because we're seeing how the political system is responding to this. Of course, at the states, states are like trying to herd cats. They're all over the place on this, and their legislature are just an open rebellion. And you see a reversion to states' rights again. So the states now are then asserting themselves, which I think is a healthy trend. After a century of power concentration by the federal government, the federal government's losing its legitimacy, and you have states, Texas, Florida. You have that Minnesota, that state senator Scott Jensen announced he's running for governor. Presumably it's an anti-COVID thing because he was the one that exposed the fraud early on in the scamdemic about the hospitals being paid, declare COVID patients.
His candidacy is a complete anti-COVID, anti-lockdown, anti-mandate. You know, those are critical issues.
And of course, the elections in Virginia, I think could be, fairly construed as, at least a big part of it was because the Youngkin campaign is not being an advocate of forced vaccinations, whereas early on McAuliffe, came out strong for forced vaccinations, mandates, even ads, making this point they were withdrawn because he found that they weren't getting traction. And so that turned a lot of, I think, Democratic voters, Republican is all the COVID nonsense.
You know, it's really amazing in that so many anti-mandate kind of movements are succeeding. I mean, the airlines are extending mm-hmm. out when you can get it. Police unions are backing down. I mean, there have been about 10 instances in the last week where it's got extended. Once the OSHA requirements collapsed, you started to see it recede like a tide. You know, it just started rolling back. And this is critical. It's just critical because when the mandates are rolled back, and I just wanted to digress and point out how wonderful the system of governance the US has is, and this is a great example of why it is so good, is that nothing could get done easily.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Exactly. There's too many sovereigns involved, and each of them has process. So you the time passes, and eventually the oligarchs will get their way. But in this instance, time was such a critical factor, and that there is no way they're going to have really draconian mandates in place in the U.S. And mandatory vaccination of all of the population before the whole thing blows up. I mean, it's the countdown to, you know, kind of medical certainty that the vaccines are not just a failure, but are deadly. We're maybe 2 months out. I mean, you look at the statements by Bill Gates last week. He was saying, well, you know, we need a vaccine that can prevent infection. I mean, Fauci's statement, right? I mean, so they are completely backpedaling on the benefits of the vaccine. So mandates just, I don't think, are going to occur. I mean, beyond we already are dealing with them, and that will give the signal a time to get set. You know, where you have people just start dropping, and then the independent media has to come forward and say, look, these are the vaccinated. These are the vaccinated that are getting sick. We talked a couple weeks ago about the Ventura Hospital just down the street from me, is where my kids were born. Whistleblowers there have gotten out and are giving testimony about how their ICUs are filled up with vaccine damage people. It isn't COVID. So I'm sure they're not, you know, atypical. This is going on, I would imagine, everywhere. They're trying to cover it up, but it's close to just complete exposure. And then after that, it's civil war, because the independent media and the skeptical will join forces with the survivors of the vaccine damage, who will change political perspective when they realize that the government was trying to kill them. And we'll see what we can do. But I mean, this is perhaps far-fetched, but this is, in my opinion, this is actually logical and very possible over the next couple of months. You know, I think by March, you could be, it could be down to how the people are able to control the government.
Well, next year, yeah, is a midterm election, and you know, usually a midterm is always tough for the party that's in power, but you know, they're anticipating a bloodbath. Of course, who knows what crisis they'll churn up or create between now and November 2022.
Yeah. Who knows, right? It's going to be crazy.
I just saw an article today where Michael Flynn said that the Democrats plan to collapse the economy so they can hold off on the election to 2022. Now, Michael Flynn isn't, you know, his predictions haven't been exactly accurate. You know, who's to say? But they're definitely doing things. If talk about wanting to collapse the economy, they're definitely doing things that would appear intended to collapse an economy. inflation and restrictions on production and COVID, you know, continued lockdowns and restrictions.
The ships that are backed up off of LA Harbor, you know, have so much of the food and chemical fertilizers and things that people need. I mean, our food situation is just heading to a cliff, you know, and so when he talks about collapsing the economy, yeah, I agree with him. They are going to collapse the economy. And they're probably going to collapse the food chain, because these would be blows against the population that they want to reduce. And so you then throw in a lethal vaccine that, like, you know, kind of wipes out the immune system, and they've got a perfect bloodbath. I mean, Tim, honestly, my honest opinion is we're looking at genocide. This is what this is. You know, I mean, this is not, you know, a financial maneuver. It's not an attempt to have political power. I mean, this is the Georgia Guidestones. You know, they want to reduce population, and this is the beginning of it. The only question in my mind is, how long is their time span? You know, what are they really thinking about? Are they going to slowly, you know, reduce the population? I mean, is there going to be, will they back off at a certain point and use incrementalism? I mean, but there is no cogent explanation.
Well, that's the problem with predicting these things, because they can improvise and change, and who knows, maybe there's a faction that's saying, okay, we've we, we you know, we tried for it. We got close, didn't get it. Let's pull back a little bit. This is getting a little too scary. And they'll back down, and then things will appear normal.
Well, you know, to the immune system are not going to be reversed.
And well, it's a question how many people actually are vaccinated. Are those numbers accurate? Is it really 60%? Yeah. You know, is that itself a lie, which would mitigate how many people are affected, and how many, what percentage of the vaccines are placebos, or, you know, carry the.
Yeah, and you look at that and you can easily imagine that there's only 10% that are really lethal doses. Yeah. But even that would be such a horrendous number that I don't think that there is any way, I can't see any kind of how the numbers will play out, where there won't be a clear signal. In other words, you're going to get millions and millions of people who have been vaccinated who will die from the vaccine. And this is something they won't be able to song and dance around. I mean, when you look at the UK all death numbers and see that, oh my God, the vaccinated are dying at twice the rate of the unvaccinated. I mean, what can you say? There has to be some. That's too. And this is incidentally, this isn't like overnight. They're talking that the trend has been in place now since the vaccines came out. The trend is 8 months old. So this is the new rate of lethality or mortality of the vaccinated.
Well, maybe they'll just normalize strokes and kids the same way they normalized, you know, peanut butter allergies and autism, and it's neurodiversity. You know, it's just
we're going to be very neurodiverse here, and we're going to be like immune system diverse here also.
Kids have strokes too, you know. That's that'll be ads you'll see, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing the propaganda, you know, and also yesterday two famous athletes in Europe both had to quit their careers because of heart failure conditions. You know, I had a friend who had a business in Chicago, and he was required, I mentioned this last week, he was required to have, like a certain fraction of them vaccinated so they could do work in city properties, because Lightfoot had put this mandate in for all city activity, any kind of city business. And so I had about 60 of his employees vaccinated, and two of them have ended up in the hospital. And I've been trying to get him to do a D-dimer test on the whole lot, or at least a statistically significant sample size, because, you know, this is how the people have to kind of start behaving going forward here. We have to just assume, you know, that we're going to be dealing with a different kind of biology, basically. You know, this is people who've taken the injection, the COVID vaccine and, you know, transvection, they are going to, you know, you have to start having more focus on their health, right? If you're an employer or if they're a family member, you're going to have to start thinking about this, because the English data is pretty straightforward. And this will be our Merry Christmas, if you ask me. We're going to, by then, that's when you'll start to see.
It's hard to say. You have Dr. Dolores Cahill in Ireland, and she said that people who have taken the vaccine, I guess by this she means the dual dose, the two doses, will in 5 to 10 years be dead. That's usually the younger people. And I don't know if she's right or on that, but it's not a ridiculous prediction, because, again, these things have long-term health effects. And by then, they won't even be associated with the vaccine. People won't, at least there'll be enough time that they can, you know, they can distract and not say, well, other things cause this. And, you know, there's a marked decline in their health, and there are other things. They just got sick. But no. I mean, so that's the problem here is how long does this thing, if you don't immediately, you know, croak from it or develop a problem from it, doesn't in 3, 5, 6, 7, 10 years cause a decline in your health because your immune system suffers and you become chronically ill. And in that decade, it become normalized the same way that chronic illness has become normalized in the United States. So everyone has to be treated all the time. But the thing about that is, though, if it's too deadly, it gets everyone's attention, right? So maybe this is why only 5% are tainted as such.
Exactly.
You know, because I think the end game, or at least what the big part of this control system, this is something you see in Austria, where you see Austria with all these, you know, these mandates, these lockdown rules, which are only capable of people comply with it, because there's no way they can enforce it if everyone said, no, we're not going to do this. They don't have the resources, the power, or the monitoring systems to make sure you don't go, certain 3 meters from your house or something, whatever, or, 3 miles from that, whatever. But as part of the passport systems that they tried to, implement in relation to the vaccines, this has a monitoring capacitor. They can track you. And then if you throw in central bank digital currencies, then the control system sets. And so then they can tell, how far you can go from house, where you can spend your money, what you can spend your money on. And so that's what this whole thing is. That's what Michael Gedin, the Pfizer, former Pfizer executive, the head of science for Pfizer, said that, it's a pretext for a vaccine passport control system. And he says, if that gets implemented, say goodbye to, the liberal democratic societies that we thought we lived under, even the pretext.
Say goodbye to humanity, because what would exist then would be, would be biology, but it would be controlled by the oligarchs. Think about Brave New World with the alphas, the deltas, So they would not let free-thinking, clear-minded individuals, in their society who weren't part of their club. So if you have that kind of a passport, and particularly, remember, you're going to be required to go outside. You're going to have to take your booster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can't leave the apartment without first the booster. So you'll just be on a fast track to, biological oblivion one way or another. So there's no point in just protesting that system. You have to destroy it and the people who are trying to implement it. We don't have any other choice. It's hard to imagine negotiating with them or having democracy work successfully to the extent that, you could thwart them in that manner. What's going to be taking place in Austria and Germany over the next couple of months is really just going to be fighting for life. And if they lose, those who comply, you're going to end up in just the system you described. And that won't be in 10 years. That'll be next year. You'll have social credit. You'll have all of these booster requirements, and you have to have your iPhone on. You can't go out of your house, and so they can track every single step you take. That is exactly what they want. That is exactly where we are headed.
Mm-hmm.
And once they have us in that mode, then they will have access to our biology. They're already able to get into our genes with RNA. So once they have us there, then they will reduce us to subhumans, slaves, whatever, and oblivion. So when we consider, how to approach this Christmas season, I would hope that we have in mind, what we are fighting here and how serious and energized we need to be. We can't really just let events unfold. We have to take initiative here. And that's why even though in the United States, there are no protests, and of course there's very little meaningful lockdowns going on at the moment, but all around the world today, there were real protests. I mean, I'm talking 3 in Australia, which is shocking to me, and good for the Aussies. The protests in Vienna had over 400,000 people. Paris was lit up, Munich. They were just everywhere today. So the protesters need to communicate among themselves to support the movements which should come out of the protests, which need to be one single movement. It's one movement. It is the freedom of the people who are being locked down. We have to support ourselves. It's like Australia. There a lot of them are calling out for help. If anyone has the capacity to get in there with some real support for the Australians, they need to do that. And that's what the protesters should try, should be, while they are there in the streets and in control of the streets, they should use those precious moments to communicate and say, well, how do we fight? What do we fight with? They need to think about like the kind of resistance. I think the best parallel would be the Hungarian Revolution, you know, during the Soviet bloc era. They almost made it, you know.
Then the tanks rolled in.
Yeah, no, that's right. But you see, I think that at this point they can even, you know, there are even ways to deal with tanks. And we don't really have much to lose, Tim, because I think the world you envisioned is very much real. I think that is exactly what they're going to be having in mind.
I still think the biggest enemy the Australian people have are themselves. I mean, what percent of the Australian people, they're complying. You know,
all of us, we are the biggest, we have been propagandized.
Yeah.
And intellectually controlled for so many years that it's very, very difficult for us to think creatively about resistance. And you're absolutely right. The biggest enemy we face is ourselves, but there isn't time or a lot of time to do, soul searching or, you know, whatever. Those that can fight, those that have clear minds, they just have to organize now. Because it's just this next, I mean, you know, they will be trying to really ramp up the genocide over the next 6 months in Northern Europe and in Australia too. But I think Australia will, because they're cycling out, you know, into their summer, they will probably not be locked down too severely. But in Europe, they're going to, if any Austrian or German who goes into their apartment willingly, without a plan as to how to get out, we'll probably never get out. You know, I mean, that's how serious these lockdowns are going to be. And also remember, this is at the beginning of winter. If they can get them locked down inside their little apartments, then they can cut off the heat.
Yeah.
Given that the weakened immune system that so many of these people are going
to
have.
Well, they need to step out and not comply. I mean, there's no way they can enforce, individually maybe, but I mean, what type of police force does the Australian government have, the Austrian government have to police, well, to make sure no one's going so far from their homes?
From what I can gather, the police force is at low tide because a lot of them have left and have joined the rebellion.
Well, see, there you go. Yeah.
This is a great moment for the Austrians to actually organize a rebellion of some kind. You know, this is what it's going to take. I mean, these are hard words to say, and I'm sure they're hard words to accept. But I mean, honestly, Tim, what do you think? What else can the Austrians do at this point?
Well, they have to realize, in pretty much everyone, throughout the developed world, is their national governments are captured.
Yeah.
You know, and so, the United States is a little different. You have states and the level of control varies from state to state. But once they realize that the governments are captured, then they're no longer legitimate. Then you no longer have that psychological hold you have on them. And so right. It goes back to that, the consciousness of the people to they say you have to stay in your home and you can't walk more than 2 miles from your house. Well, no, don't comply with it. If everyone doesn't comply with it, there's no way they can enforce it, you know.
Yeah.
And some of these rules are they're so obviously counter to people's best interests, their health and their well-being, that why would anyone follow them? You know, like other than the fear, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, people are afraid to go against the authorities. And I think a lot of them, I have such a small sample size and I have so much skepticism and concern that it's hard to think I'm an objective viewer, but there are two people I know, I think I've mentioned both of my experience, they've had boosters, mm-hmm. and I just don't think they're clear-minded. I mean, they're kind of, daffy anyway. I mean, to take the booster and believe the whole thing, you know, you wonder about them, but I mean, I think that they're kind of in a dream world. One of them said it was like being seasick for like a week. So I think that those people will go into their homes. I don't think that the vaxxed, you know, I could be wrong about this. I hope there's more. I mean, I hope that there's a huge fraction of them that will be clear-minded and not be killed by it, which is very possible, given the lethality of the certain lots, that the placebo lots may, you know, not really be that damaging to people. But the signal will be clear enough so that, you know, whether you got a bad or not, you can see the edge that we can drive into the group that has succumbed to the propaganda to harvest those that realize by what's about to happen that this gives them the signal, and they say, you know, I'm tired of complying. I'm going to work with these guys to, you know, take back our two square blocks. You know, we are going to go outside and we are going to arm ourselves, and we're not going to let these people come in here and just starve us and freeze us to death, which is what they intend to do, I'm afraid. And we're going to go out and we are going to protect ourselves, and God help any, you know, tiny squad car that comes in here, because remember Solzhenitsyn, you know, when he talked about how if only we had just done some resistance at the beginning of them taking the people to the gulag, we could have stopped it. His words should be on every protest banner in the European world at this point. I mean, we should just have those words in our mind all the time, that if we had just stood up and stopped them when they started this, that we could have, with the gulags, would never have succeeded. Well, I mean, they are creating a biological gulag, and now they're talking about mandatory vaccination for the entire population in Austria. They're not talking about it. Tim, it's the law of the land at the moment.
Yeah, and they want to give it to kids who are at no risk.
Oh, it's for everyone, 100%. Yeah. So this is our moment. Solzhenitsyn's words are clear cut. We have to respond as he knew we should have done then. So, you know, just think about like a two square block area that you live in. Who is there that you can think, you know, you can work to defend yourself? Because if you're in Austria, I mean, what can you do, Tim? I mean, you know, they're one of the things that they have are now, they're going to be putting in mail the vaccination due date. In other words, they give you a schedule that you have to show up with your family, right? Otherwise you're in breach. They're literally going to be passing out letters with, well, you have to be at the clinic at this date, bring your two kids, we're vaccinating you up. Well, that's it. You know, this is the moment where Solzhenitsyn, you know, they have a little better, technique of taking us to the gulag, but it's still the same. You're going to get to the same place, which is oblivion. So this is, you know, maybe a good time to try to organize locally, organize within, you know, 100 yards of where you live. And if you can get that accomplished, maybe, you know, branch out a bit, but you have to be ready to defend one another if, you know, like, because remember, they're not going to send out a platoon to collect the family. It's just going to be a few people. They're just going to come out and say, well, you missed your vaccination schedule. We have like a judicial order, and we're going to put you in the car, take you to the vaccine clinic. And it's no big deal. Get in the car. It's like four people. Well, if 40 people want to stop them, they can.
Yeah.
And that has to happen all across the entire country.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, this will be in a really,
we'll, you know, see.
This is exciting. This week will be another one.
So, okay, enjoy the weekend.
Right. Bye bye. You too. Bye bye.